There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my
What's going to happen at the library is wrong, but it's not legally wrong. It's morally wrong. It's not legally wrong now. Because there's nothing against it. There's no law against reading to children. I don't care who has done the reading. There's no law. There's no statute against reading. So the city can't get involved because they're not breaking any law.
There's no, check it. I don't even think it has, there's no police code. Hey, law enforcement friends of mine, can y'all, Eddie, is there a 1030, what is it? Is there any kind of code, no police code for reading? So I guess it is not against the law. How we start hour number two of Midday Mobile. And we talked about yesterday's Mobile County Commission meeting. And obviously this is the last hour, a lot about Mobile City Council meeting and the discussion of drag queen story hour coming to the Mobile Public Library on September 8th. And a man who was at both the county meeting and today's city meeting from AL.com, our buddy John Sharp. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean, how you doing?
Doing good. And so you've been at both of these this week.
That's correct, yes.
And so takeaway, I guess let's go back to yesterday in the county commission, and then we'll bring it forward to today's meeting. So what went down?
Yeah, yesterday was a large crowd. I mean, it was a much bigger crowd than what we had today. Today there was a crowd, don't get me wrong, but yesterday it pretty much filled up, I would say, three-quarters of Government Plaza. And it was opponents of the event on September 8th, the Drag Queen Story, the Drag Queen Story Hour, and mostly folks from local Baptist churches. A couple of pastors got up and spoke, and it was at the county commission meeting. Comments were made by two of the county commissioners, Connie Hudson and Jerry Carl, basically expressing their concerns about the event, but expressing also that there's not much that the county can do. Now, Mercuri Lovegood made no comment. But, you know, despite hearing the concerns expressed by the crowd, you know, again, this is an issue that the county commission, though they support the library through funding every year, they provide an appropriation, there is nothing that the county can do to say, look, we're shutting the library down on September 8th. So that message was made yesterday. Today, very similar. Now, the library is an arm of the city of Mobile. It's essentially a city department. The library board is appointed by the city council, and it receives a lion's share of its funding from the city of Mobile. So with all that at play, today's meeting was maybe a little bit more important to see kind of where the city council has some thoughts on this whole issue and whatnot. And so we heard from Pastor Fred Wolf, who spoke both at the Monday meeting at the county commission and today. And another lady got up and spoke out of concern about the event on September 8th and expressed very similar concerns about the morality of the event. Pretty much doesn't line up to their views on a proper being held at a library, the type of event that should be held at a library. And then the city council came in with its comments and, said that, there's not much that they can do. They can't prevent a particular group. It's a First Amendment issue. They can't restrict a particular organization from utilizing a public library meeting space. And Scott Kinney, director of the library, was there. He got up and spoke today. He wasn't at yesterday's meeting, but he was at today's meeting. He got up and spoke and made, similar comments that, the library has a set of policies for using its meeting spaces. This group met those policies, and beyond that, there's nothing that they can do. They can't just, say, well, we don't agree with this group, so we're shutting the library down on you. you know, you met the policies to use a meeting space, and we're going to allow you to use them. And there's a concern that if they did start saying, well, this group can't come to the library, but this group can, you're looking at a very expensive federal lawsuit rendered against the city, or the library and the city by extension.
Sure, and there's the reality of it, that federal lawsuit, but also a very slippery slope when you start deciding, you know, which way. I mean, there are limits. To say there are no limits, we can come up with some extreme scenario that would probably be denied by the library. But outside of that, you start denying this group, then you're going to have to say specifically why you say okay to the other group. And also, with this being a public building, I was concerned. I said, you know, if this was happening on private property, I think it would be zero discussion. I think there would be no discussion because it wouldn't be anybody's business. But people argue that their tax dollars are going to fund this. At the same time, let me turn around and say, you know, our tax dollars, I think probably individuals have tax dollars go to fund things they don't agree with every day. But the director, Scott Kenny, he said, hey, even the power, the electricity, it's going to be on there no matter what because we're open on Saturday. So there's really no cost. Whether the group was there or not, there will not be an additional cost to the taxpayer. Is that kind of the paraphrase there?
Yeah, there's absolutely no cost to the taxpayer for this event. I mean, they're utilizing the room, and yes, the power will be on. The air conditioning will be running, but all that would be going on anyways, just like you said. And so... this is not a library-sanctioned event. They're not putting this on. A group came in. They followed the rules and regulations as they're spelled out. And so the event's scheduled as planned. I mean, there's nothing that the library can do. I mean, literally, they're like, hey, you know, Jerry Carl made the comment yesterday that, you know, potentially maybe we ought to look at their budget. And the interesting side note in all this is that we're in budget season right now, and the Mayor Stimson's budget came out just yesterday, and it showed that the library funding is being cut by about $500,000. Now, our reporter, Lawrence Specker, went and asked Chief of Staff Paul Wesch, is there any retaliation because of this drag queen story hour? You know, is this how, you know, you get back at maybe the libraries, events, and all this other? And there isn't. I mean, that's not the case at all here. The Stimson administration argue that, well, you know, we're funding the library at a greater amount than other cities, for instance, like Montgomery. So that's kind of an interesting aside. Jerry Carl brought it up on Monday, though, that kind of made you stop and think, well, if we're cutting, you know, if they're losing a little bit of funding here, and Commissioner Carl made the comment that maybe, you know, there are areas that could be cut within the library's budget if, you know, these type of events are going on. So, you know, there's a little bit of political play going on there a little bit. But, you know, the library itself, though, there's, you know, Scott, from Scott Kinney's perspective is, you know, I'm not the National American Library Association. I'm the Mobile Public Library. There's only so much I can do. And if I tell this group they can't come because, you know, morally we don't agree with what they're putting on, you know, I'm looking at a very expensive lawsuit that's going to hit the taxpayers' mobile right in the wallet.
It will, and, you know, also, once again, I think it opens up this question, this going forward, if this is, and I think the majority of people that have been texting, and not all of them, but majority of people been texting into the show or calling in are opposed to this, but at the same time, you know, at some day down the road, it may be something else that they do approve of. That, I mean, if you start that, I mean, it starts to get into the world of pretty arbitrary decision making, doesn't it? I mean, that you have somebody who's a library director having to be the social conscience of a community.
Yeah, and the library being kind of the cultural battlefield, and it gets to be a very, yeah, you're right, it gets to be a slippery slope, and that's kind of what you're looking at. You know, a lot of major metropolitan areas where these events have occurred have generated very little controversy, but we've seen some bubble up lately. So this is kind of these events, these drag queen story read events have been occurring at more frequency, it seems like. And I think, you know, they're kind of swinging through the South, and it's it's becoming a social concern in an area that's more conservative than other areas of the country. And so it's becoming more of a conversation right now than we've heard, I think, previously when these events were occurring in New York City or even New Orleans to a certain extent. They've been going on in New Orleans for about a year or two now. So, but we've seen Lafayette, Louisiana's had some pushback. We saw a little bit of pushback in Houston, Texas, which is one of the largest cities in the country. But still, there was some pushback by a city council member over there. So it's definitely, you know, the library's kind of taken on this issue. The American Library Association's kind of taken on this issue itself, too. While it's not come out and endorsed the event, it has also endorsed events that bring about diversity and this type of discussion in communities.
You were talking about this, and I want to have people go back if they did not read it yesterday, your story about the county commission one, where you lay out some of the backstory here that you're just talking about. But what is the backstory? This is you mentioned Houston and Lafayette and those places, but how long has this been going on? And is this something that, you know, that it's now just yesterday's news, you're saying, in other places where there's not any problem with it, it's going on and doesn't make the paper?
Yeah, it started in 2015, the same year that you know, the Supreme Court ruled basically legalizing same-sex marriage in the country. And it was an idea that was born out of California, and it moved over into libraries in New York City. And when we're talking about major metropolitan areas, Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York. And basically, it is what it is. I mean, a drag queen sitting there reading a couple of children's stories to young kids ages 3 to 8, and the event goes on for about an hour. There's two stories that are read, a couple of breaks, and then about 15 minutes or so of arts and crafts,
and yes.
That's it.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's it. And at any rate, that's, you know, that's what's been going on. There's been a couple of stories written about it nationally. I mean, New York Times picked it up when it was going on in New York City. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of a unique thing. It was nothing that had been going on previously of note. And so, you know, the national, more of the larger newspapers in the country kind of picked up and ran with it, but it's just kind of recently come, you know, in the smaller cities, I guess you could say, like Lafayette, Louisiana, and now we're looking at Mobile. I think there was a city in Georgia that held one, and there was some protest there. There was an event that was held, I believe, up in Alaska that drew some protesters. So the more it's pushing out into the country, you're getting different reactions because areas of the country are different than you know, New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. And so that's kind of why we're seeing a little bit of this, you know, we're seeing the pushback right now. You know, but there is a little bit of backstory there. It's been going on for several years. There is an organization, dragqueenstoryhour.org, I believe. There is an organization that kind of has, it's a nonprofit group that's overseeing these events. As far as I know, here locally it's being sponsored by Rainbow Mobile, which is a group that was formed about less than a year ago. So, you know, there's some interesting backstory, interesting where, you know, kind of, you know, how this might, this event might unfold maybe throughout Alabama. I mean, I talked to the gentleman that was going to be performing at the September 8th event. He is a Tuscaloosa native, and he moved to Mobile about a year ago. And he's talking about wanting to do it up in the Tuscaloosa, Birmingham area. So, you know, this could be something that Mobile is maybe a testing ground on September 8th. We'll see. But I imagine we're going to see a lot of protests. Counter-protests. It's going to be an interesting day.
Yeah, we've been a couple different groups that are planning to protest. One in particular, with the Common Sense Tea Party, they've contacted us. They've got that protest, I guess, starting at 10 on that Saturday morning, the 8th. And I'm looking at a couple texts here, John. People are saying, well, you said it's no cost to the taxpayers, but won't, and I'm paraphrasing a couple different folks here, won't MPD have to be there to provide security? So therefore, because the protest, therefore, it's going to be a cost to taxpayers. I mean, have you talked to anybody with MPD? Are they preparing for, you know, any kind of extra work?
I have not, but I, you know, the question was asked by John Williams today to Ricardo Wood, whether or not the city administration was preparing for protests. He said that there had been some initial conversations on that, but we don't know any further details beyond that at this point.
All right. JohnSharpAL.com. Of course, the story from yesterday up. Are you putting a new piece up after today's meeting?
No, yeah, we got several people. Again, I mentioned, people are interested in this issue.
Big time.
The story I am focusing on, and I mentioned earlier, is the library's budget. It's kind of an interesting side story, but it is definitely something that whether or not, there is a little bit of correlation to this event, too, that, we want to bring about and discuss. And I'm actually also going to be doing a story about the question of what is a drag queen. There's a lot of people in Mobile, apparently, that are clueless. And this is not coming from me. This is coming from Reverend Fred Wolf. He said point blank, he said, there's a lot of people just don't know what a drag queen is. And so there's some interesting, a long history there, and I'm going to try and dive into some of that as well.
Are you like a dummy's guide to drag queens?
So, as best as I can, Sean, as best as I can.
And also, reminder on something entirely not having to do with this subject, John is one of the 100-plus folks that's in the College Pick'em Challenge. John, I'm just...
You found me.
Yeah, we found you in there, so reminding everybody else, we got till Friday to get in, and then you can... So, I mean, the trash talking will start, and I'm ready for your trash talk, so...
I do the fantasy football. I do this kind of stuff, too. I saw that you were doing this. I'm like, okay, I'll jump into this, and we'll start the trash talking. But these, let's be honest here. These things are just kind of a roll-the-dice type of thing. We'll see what works best. But there's some interesting games here to start off the season. So, I put in my picks. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head what they are anymore. But
you picked Alabama.
Where to go?
You picked Alabama. Huh? You picked Alabama.
Oh, of course. Well, okay, yeah, I mean, they're not going to lose. You know, the interesting note is I did tweet out, though, that I sympathize with these Central Florida fans. And that out. I got 160 to 170 likes on my tweet, mostly from folks in Orlando. So I'd probably get a free lunch if I ever went out there. But, I mean, I sympathize with them. I mean, they went undefeated, and there's no system for them
to compete for
a national championship.
Cry me a river. That's like apples and oranges.
Coming from a biased point of view, I'm coming from a viewpoint of, hey, look at these guys. I feel bad for them, And we can say cry me a river, but they're really, I don't know. In 2018, there needs to be a system to determine a national championship. Whether we split up D1 or not, I don't know. But, I mean, there shouldn't be undefeated teams sitting around going, well, maybe we could have done it. And it just doesn't seem right. It's the only sport that doesn't that has this problem, the only league. And I don't know. I don't cover sports, so I sometimes let my opinion fly on it, and that's how I feel.
There he is. My buddy and a guy very popular in the Orlando Metroplex. He's also AL.com's John Sharp. Thanks, man. We'll check back soon.
All right, Sean.
All right, coming right back, we'll grab some phone calls and some text. I got to tell you, why am I not all riled up about this, huh? With the story time coming, we'll talk about that, too, when I come back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, we'll grab a couple of calls here. But, I said going to the break, I said when this first came up, I'm like, give me a break with this thing. I mean, if there was anything compulsory about this, like people's children had to go, then you'd hear a complete different reaction from me. But it's not compulsory. It's not my problem. Like nothing really firing me up about it, other than the fact that it seems like it's a big issue around here. And is that something with me personally? Is it my age? Is it have to do something with age? I don't know. I'm looking through the text line, and a great mix from y'all, people that are just blown away this is happening, and people that are blown away with the pushback. This texter says, the amount of sheer hate coming from some of the callers is absolutely disheartening, to quote the Bible, and in the same breath call somebody a fag is not only moronic, but just plain hateful. It's simple. If you don't want to go, don't go. If it's about reading and literacy and acceptance, why don't they just read the books that they've outlined in street clothes? Why do they have to dress like women? Jace says here, very interesting, Jace, like most of his texts, he said, number one, he said, as much of a non-starter seems to be ticking people off, I'm kind of interested in dressing in drag myself and going to read some books. Would that be immoral? This is interesting, Jace. If he, as a straight guy, right, would it be immoral if he was dressed as a woman and reading books? And he said, is it the clothes? Therefore, are Scottish kilts, skirts offensive now? And is it the fact that the male is wearing makeup? Better start by protesting. You can't say that, Jace. He said, start by protesting Bob Grip then. Bob's my buddy, man. Listen, most of them. Like, the reason I always used to get such grief when I did TV, because I go in there, TV set, and people are like, you look tough compared. I said, they're all wearing makeup. I'm not wearing makeup. Everybody wears makeup in TV. But that, you know, Jace asked, if it's makeup, is it clothes? So is a straight man who had TV makeup on wearing a Scottish kilt, is it any more or less offensive? Let's go to Justine in Mobile next. Hey, Justine.
Hey, I'm going to try to be quick because I know you got other people. First of all, gender and sexuality are not the same thing.
Correct.
Okay, would cross-gender dressing be a better label, quote-unquote?
I don't know, but they labeled themselves... Hey, wait. They labeled themselves as Drag Queen Story Hour. So, I mean...
Right, I'm just asking the question. I'm putting it out there. People who cross-dress have children sometimes and family most of the time, and kids see stuff on TV, movies, etc. The former Bruce, Mrs. Doubtfire. Kids are not stupid. They can pick up on everything that comes across. And selling them short, you know, we're selling them short if we think so. And no offense to my friends, Christian or other, you know, religions, but reverends, priests, or coaches, etc., the recent reports of child abuse are probably not mostly done by cross-dressers. And finally, in the mid-1500s, a guy named William Shakespeare put on a lot of plays with young guys in drag because women weren't allowed in the theater.
Yeah. There we go. Justine, appreciate the call. We could either make it fast. Y'all hold on. We'll run to a quick news break and come back because I have 30 seconds. The hard break is coming and it's not fair to put y'all on for a second. So y'all hold on. We'll come back to the phones at 343-0106. Plus, Brendan Kirby's going to join us coming up in the next half hour as well. Text line 343-0106 and phone line. Same number. Come right back.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1:34, FM Talk 106.5. Run through some calls pretty quickly here and then get to our buddy Brendan Kirby, who is standing by. Brian's in Robertsdale, and first up, hey, Brian.
Hey, Mr. Sean, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. What's up?
Good deal. I got one question before I got anything to say. The person that's doing the deal at the library, mm-hmm. are they doing it in a back room somewhere? Or are they going to be sitting right out in the middle of the place? Or
the way I understand it, there's a room, like a event room or something that they're doing it in. Yeah, it's not going to be right there in the middle of the Dewey Decimal Library chart thing. Okay. It'll be like in a side room.
I'm just one of these. Everybody's got their own life to live.
Right.
You know, if they want to do something in a back room, as long as they're not right out in the middle of the public, you know, forcing their thing on everybody, I don't see the problem with it. But, you know, just like with a same-sex marriage, what you do in your own home should be your own business. Don't force it on everybody else.
Ben, that sounds like a fair way to look at life, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, you can't be all mad about everybody, what they do. There's no way to change it. So,
well said.
You know, let live and be lived, and it'll be fine.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. I would, once again, the one thing before you call up, whoa, if it was compulsory, y'all, it'd be a different story out of me. I'd be steaming and squeaking and the compulsory, but because it's free will and choice to go to it or not, like I said, I understand y'all's worry on both sides of this, but I got to tell you personally, I don't get up in the morning and worry about it. This is part of what's happening. I mean, if you think this is going to stop what you see as a change in the moral fabric of this country, that's been happening a long time. And Pastor Fred Wolf was talking about things that were immoral being discussed in the library. Let's go through. I mean, we can go through all the books in the library and have subjects that many of us would believe are immoral. I mean, Carl's in Theodore. He's up next. Hey, Carl.
Hey, guys. Beautiful day.
Thank you, man.
Listen, about this library thing, I mean, my question is, what kind of parents would actually take their
Bingo.
Small children
yeah.
to one of these events? I mean, what, especially down here in lower Alabama, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
you don't
have to, right?
You don't have to. If
no,
if you had to.
So if nobody shows up, they'll get the message, maybe.
That's right. I mean, what was the old question? You know, if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, did it actually make a noise? Or if somebody in drag reads stories to children, but there were no children there, did they actually read it? So I'm working on that one. Derek is in Fairhope. Hey, Derek.
What's going on, guys? What's going on?
Hey, man.
You know, it's a tough subject morally. You know, no, I don't agree with that. I don't want my kids to think it's okay to wear a dress. But I would defend their right to do it. You know, they have that right. I don't want somebody to take it away from me. I don't agree with it, but if I had to be out there to form a human shield so that way they can express their opinion, that's the founding document, man. You know, if you don't agree, don't go. But, geez, man, don't take that right away. Because if you take that right away, like you said earlier, pretty soon they're going to come for yours.
That's right. Next time it'll be something that, you know, that I hold dear, and then, you know, who's going to be there for me? So
Exactly.
Thank you, man. Appreciate the call. I do. And we're going to get to Brendan Kirby here because he's been holding here. And one last thing, though. Travis says, Sean, I'm going to give my kids the benefit of the doubt. Would ask my boys if they want to go listen to the man dressed up like a woman read some stories while you sit Indian style on the floor while he sits on a bar stool. Or would you rather go to the farm and fish and shoot your guns? Travis, I think that's brilliant. That's my kind of parenting. Hey, y'all have a choice. Which one do you want to do? Guess what the answer will be. All right, our buddy Brendan Kirby from LifeSet.com, also the author of Wicked Mobile, joining us now. Hey, Brendan.
Hey, how you doing, Sean?
It's been wild. I guess I'm doing okay. If we could only have any kind of... If we could get controversy over you reading Wicked Mobile like this, we could get you all kind of press. You know that.
Yeah, so I guess, should I dress in drag
Yes.
and do a dramatic reading of the book? And would that move copies off the shelf?
It moves something. By lunch or something. But yes, we could plan on that. I'm working on that right now, if that's going to be our stunt for even more attention for Wicked Mobile.
Well,
so,
you know, nothing to have to do with drag queens, but I have had friends volunteer to try to make a big ruckus about my book and create some sort of controversy that it's offensive in some way or controversial.
Right. That's how it's done, right?
Resulting sales.
Right, so we got to get some big controversy around the book, or people can just pick up a copy because it is a great read. All right, I want to talk about some of the stories you have up at LifeSet.com right now. And I emailed you something here a second ago, but your story, New Study Explodes the Myth of Jobs Americans Won't Do. Now, you and I have talked about this in the past on the show. This is why you need to have increased immigration. You need to have more people coming to the United States because there are these jobs that go undone because Americans won't do them, right?
Right, yeah, and that's something that we've probably all heard over and over again. It's a talking point that has just been repeated so often that I think people just accept it as truth because it sort of makes sense without really thinking about it. But the Center for Immigration Studies has done the math. They've dug in the census figures, and what they find is there are plenty of Americans doing jobs that Americans supposedly won't do. They looked at all 4,000 plus occupations defined by the Commerce Department. And then they looked at the national origin statistics, and what they found is that American, native-born Americans make up a majority of the workers in every occupation except for six. And those six occupations, they account for about 1% of all U.S. workers, and there's like something like 750,000 Americans even in those jobs that immigrants do. And these would be things like farm-type jobs and, agriculture product sorters, plasterers, and masonry is one. There's six different occupations. When they say jobs Americans won't do, they're getting done by Americans. And if all you need to do really is think about it from a common sense standpoint. If you live in a place where there's not a lot of immigrants, those jobs are not going to be done by immigrants. In Mobile, there are not that many immigrants, yet all these jobs that supposedly only immigrants do are still getting done by somebody.
Okay, let me go to another cliche, though, while we're talking about it. It's jobs Americans won't do for that amount of money, right? There's the argument.
And I always add that when I hear like a corporate interest or a business interest say, I can't fill this job. It's a job Americans won't do. I always add to myself, for that pay. And if you're having trouble finding someone to do a job, maybe you have to offer more money. I mean, that's the way the market is supposed to work. And if you can bypass that by bringing in an unlimited number of low-skill immigrants from foreign countries to do the job, you know, then you can keep your labor costs low. I totally understand, by the way, why a business owner would want to do that. But, you know, it's I don't think it necessarily follows that that's good for Americans and good for America.
Okay, so the flip side of this is people like the Wall Street Journal story this morning that said, you know, hedges are overgrown and lawns need mowing, signs of a strong economy. And it's a story about people that are in the landscape business who felt they couldn't get enough people to work. Now, that's really not in our area, but in different areas, they couldn't get folks to work. Because why we needed more people in here, because they couldn't get Americans to do the job.
Yeah, well, once again, groundskeepers is another category where immigrants you know, make up close to half, but not quite half of all workers that are in grounds. I think they call it groundskeeping and lawn maintenance or something like that. But in certain areas, they are dominated by immigrants. And yeah, I mean, it. One of the signs of a strong economy is that you know, you're at full employment. It's harder to fill jobs. But I would add, if we were truly at full employment, and we could, you know, there was no way, you know, we're just out of workers. You know, logically, from an economics model, what we should be seeing is rapidly rising wages, but we're not seeing that.
That's an interesting.
Wages are not going up, and particularly for the set of Americans that we're talking about that are most affected by immigration here, people with a high school diploma or less. Those people have not seen their real wages increase in decades. And they're not going up now, which tells me maybe we're not really at full employment, because there are millions of people that are still on the sidelines. They're not counted in the official unemployment statistics because they're not looking for work. But maybe if there was a job they were qualified to do that paid more than it pays now, maybe they would come in off the sidelines.
Okay, it's interesting on what people are making. Is it sticky? Like, you know, I look at gasoline prices, and where people say, you know, they're sticky up top, but not sticky. You know, I mean, they're sticky when they're high, but not when they're low and rising. And I wonder about that with what people are being paid in those jobs. In other words, you know, you'll see gasoline prices. As soon as anything happens, a butterfly falls into the, let alone the Iranians taking control of the Persian Gulf, but a butterfly falls in the Persian Gulf, and then everything, they're going to raise the price of oil by this much, gasoline prices go up, then everything swell, and you have a new deal done, and it doesn't fall as quickly as it rose. Is that same thing? Is there a delay? Is there a lag built in that might come out, you know, and change that?
Well, I definitely think that it's hard to see wages fall in nominal terms, you know, because I mean, once you've raised your cost of labor, you're probably not going to lower it.
No, but they lay off people, I guess, is the yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, and also, just as with gas, when gas reaches a certain price, you know, we use less of it. You know, at a certain point, if labor costs rise to a certain level, it's not profitable to do the business anymore. I mean, this is what we've seen in places that have gone to the $15 minimum wage. Companies have responded to that by, you know, closing in some instances or moving someplace else or using fewer workers, you know, automating. You know, so that would, you know, happen at a certain point, you would think. But, you know, for most of these jobs we're talking about, in most places, I don't think we're kind of close to that level. You know, if the job pays $8 an hour, and you have to pay $9 or $10 an hour to get the workers, that's probably not going to drive people out of business, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, there's a two parts, actually. There's probably many more parts of this discussion, but quite often the focus is going to be on people in these low-skilled, low-paying jobs, and you're talking about immigrant. But, you know, this is also the subject of high-tech, right? STEM jobs and bringing people in who will work these STEM jobs for less than Americans would demand for that job.
Right, and that's a little bit of a different story there, because
that's
there
legal,
you start talking about temporary guest workers.
Right, yeah, but at the same effect,
but
right?
But it is the same story, for sure. You know, the whole idea of these HB1 visas was, well, you know, businesses can't find STEM people, so we're going to bring people in, you know, to do these jobs. What you find is they're not bringing in geniuses for the most part to do these jobs, where they're looking for the best of the best all over the world. They're just looking to get someone, and that's even worse, because you come in on one of those visas, the company owns the visa. The company controls the worker. The worker can't go to another company, you know, without the permission of the company that brought them in. which means the company has a lot of control over the wage. Right? If you don't like your job and you want to get a better job, you know, a citizen or a normal immigrant can go. If you come in on one of these visas, you can't. That's even more unfair when you think about it, and especially because, you know, again, the data show there are twice as many people in this country, Americans and legal immigrants, who have STEM degrees than there are people working in STEM fields. So there's a lot of underemployed people, you know, and also people that have a STEM degree and, you know, maybe they're doing something totally different that is a great job. But you have a lot of people trained in STEM who aren't working in STEM. So this idea that, oh, we're not producing enough, scientists and engineers is somewhat of a myth. Unless you think for some reason the American STEM degree holders are somehow less qualified than the guest workers from foreign countries, and I haven't seen any evidence that that's the case.
All right, we'll run to the news break, and coming back more with Brendan Kirby, a study detailing thousands of illegal voters, while we're talking about this, in sanctuaries. Listen to this headline. Report documents 3,120 non-citizens on voter rolls in 13 jurisdictions, including one who voted in 10 straight elections. More on this when we return.
FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 150, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along. Pretty interesting. So, Crypto Marine on the text line and Brendan Kirby on the phone line, both within like 30 seconds, were asking me a somewhat similar question here. And this is why I do have friends. I don't know what's wrong with my friends. I have lots of friends. I don't know why they are my friends. But somebody said, you know, Crypto Marine said, do you let a Nazi in full uniform read the Nuremberg Laws? It is their right. And I would say it is their First Amendment right. I think it's classless, but I think it's their First Amendment right. You petitioned that if one of those alt-right groups wanted to, what,
yeah,
go,
I mean,
read
not,
a children's
not even,
book.
Not even as extreme as the
read
type
a children's
of that you
book.
Put in. But,
yes.
You know, kind of an alt-right group or, you know, a white nationalist. I hear white nationalist. I'm not even sure what that is. But one of these organizations, and, you know, they come and do an event, and not even reading, like, alt-right propaganda, but just reading children's stories, but sponsored by, and I don't even know the name of these organizations, to be, you know, a council.
Illinois Nazis, whatever they are.
You know, I'm guessing a lot of people, you know, would maybe have a different opinion on this. You know, that wouldn't want to be associated with that. So, you know, I definitely think this is why the government should stay out of, you know, trying to regulate the content of speech.
I completely agree. I would just say on both of them, I say, you know, if it's compulsory and required, different story. If it's an elective, then... Oh, well. All right. We'll switch gears back to another story from LifeSet. You're popping them up today online. And this one, back to something you've talked about in the past, whether it be one or I don't know how many millions have been quoted that there are, you know, the president had talked about it. People after 2016 said there were, what wasn't it, a million something illegal votes, they said, that might have happened.
I think Trump might have suggested that maybe the number of illegal votes coincidentally was just over the margin of his defeat to Hillary Clinton in the national popular.
That hasn't been vetted out. That has not been.
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone that anyone credible has looked at this and think that there are 3 to 5 million illegal voters. But there's also not zero.
Right, and you've been somebody who's been.
You know, voter fraud doesn't exist. Voter fraud is a myth. You know, voter fraud is so rare that it's 0.0003% of all votes cast, whatever you hear. And usually,
that's not true either.
Usually, people making these statements are looking at data on convictions and criminal charges, and these things are rarely prosecuted. There were just 19 people in North Carolina that were just charged last week with casting votes in the 2016 election, even though they weren't citizens. So it gets prosecuted sometimes, but not much. But that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. And there's a group founded by a former Justice Department lawyer, Christian Adams. He's spoken in Mobile before. He has an organization called the Public Interest Legal Foundation. And what they do is they go around the different jurisdictions, and they do FOIA requests for all correspondence related to voters who have been removed from the rolls. And, you know, now they'll remove voters because maybe they've died or maybe they found that they've moved to another place. But there are some voters who are removed because they're not citizens. And in the majority of cases, the election board finds out about it when the voters themselves step forward and say, hey, I'm on the rolls as a registered voter, but I'm not a citizen, so you should take me off. And so they get all that together, and they count them up, and then they go back and look and see if they've actually voted in elections, and in a bunch of cases, they have. They actually have voted, even though they were not citizens when they registered to vote. And they looked at 13 different sanctuary jurisdictions for this latest report, and they counted over 3,000 people that were registered to vote, even though they were not eligible because they weren't citizens. And they say that, you know, they chose these sanctuary jurisdictions because they figure that if you're in a sanctuary jurisdiction, the chances that you're going to face criminal charges are about zero. So you don't even have the deterrent of possible prosecution to stop you from doing it.
All right. So so the reality is between the two extremes, right? Say that there's these millions and millions of people out there that are illegal voters. Maybe that's not true. But the fact is, I mean, you go back because it is. I mean, it's either one or the other, right? A lot of people, either it's millions or there's really nothing appreciable. You have detailed, this is not your first story on this. You have detailed this over time, showing pockets of straight up, whether it be premeditated or just ignorant illegal voting.
Yeah, and I have not seen an instance like this where it's part of an organized ring. Okay, you don't have people that are kind of rounding up non-citizens and knowingly getting them to register to vote and vote. So I think when people say voter fraud, they think about it in terms of that. This is just sort of individual cases. And some of them may be by accident, and some of them may be willful. And because it's sometimes difficult to tell the difference, it's another reason why they sometimes don't get prosecuted. But it's indisputable. I mean, the records are there. It's a small number. It's closer to zero than it is 5 million.
Right.
But it's, for every ineligible voter that manages to cast a ballot, that cancels out the vote of a real voter, of a real citizen. And that should be something that we should eliminate to the extent that we can. And it does have the potential to influence a very, very close elections. Now, you know, I mean, the Trump-Hillary race wasn't close enough to matter. But if you think back to 2000, George W. Bush beat Al Gore in Florida by 536 votes. Is it possible that there could have been more ineligible voters that cast ballots? Yeah, it's possible. Certainly possible. And by the way, we tend only to know about the ones that come forward voluntarily. Because, you know, our voting system operates on an honor system. And when you go in to get your driver's license, as all legal permanent residents can do and illegal immigrants can do in certain states, you get the motor voter prompt. And there's a question there that says, you know, are you a citizen? You're supposed to say no. But if you don't, you're going to get a voter card, and no one's really going to check. And in one of these cases in San Diego County, immigrant comes in, gets his driver's license. He needs help actually filling out the form because his English isn't good enough. And he left that citizenship question blank. Are you a citizen? So he didn't lie. He just left it blank. But, you know, no one checked into it, and they gave a voter card. And then lo and behold, guess what? He voted in 10 elections.
Wow.
And then he was finally removed when immigration authorities informed the San Diego Voting Board about it, and then they took him off. Well, we know about a case like that. We know about a case when a legal permanent resident comes forward and asks to be removed, probably because they want to naturalize as a citizen and they don't want that to cause a problem. But we don't know how many people have done this very same thing and have not come forward and alerted election officials and are still on the roll. So, you know, it's... it's not an organized conspiracy, and it's small enough that it doesn't actually affect the outcome of most elections. But, like, so what? What is the possible argument for removing those names from the rolls if we can? There are ways that we could strengthen our election system to audit, match these records against immigration databases and so forth, and find people who are on the rolls who aren't supposed to be there, and then remove them. I mean, it seems like a normal functioning democracy would do that without any controversy.
There he is, Brendan Kirby. That story and more over at LifeSet.com. Also, if somebody wants to pick up a copy of Wicked Mobile, how do they do that?
Well, you know, you can get them, you know, the boring way, you know, on Amazon or go to a bookstore. But I like your hot fries suggestion.
Yes, if you'll see them on the end cap.
Your local pharmacy.
That's right. On the end cap, y'all, there at the end of the aisle, they'll have books at the pharmacy and also delicious snacks. And it's good combo. Also, if somebody wants to reach out to you to talk about this or any of the other subjects you're bouncing around on a daily basis, is Twitter probably best?
Yeah, you can go to @BrendanKKirby and yell at me on Twitter like other people do. Or if you just want to read the stories, you can go to lifeset.com.
Great stuff. Thank you, Brendan. And we're out of here. Paul Feinbaum show on the way next. Be back tomorrow morning bright and early for Mobile Mornings. We'll see you here at 6:00.